And he didn't come home, either, Reacher said. Not unless Griezmann's guy missed him twice. So where is he now?
Out and about, Nagley said. Somewhere in Germany. The phase before delivery. Like the dealer inspection when you buy a new car. Ahead of the big reveal.
Wiley was waking up in his bedroom, the same place he had woken up for the last 3 months, in his rented apartment on the waterfront, the new development, a village within the city. But not really. It was actually a giant dormitory, full of incurious people who rushed in and out in the dark and slept the few hours between. He had never seen his neighbors, and as far as he knew, they had never seen him. Perfect. He got up and set his coffee machine going. He rinsed the fumes out of the Dom Perignon bottle and placed it in the recycle bin. He put his glass in the dishwasher. He picked up his phone and dialed the rental franchise he had used before. The call was answered immediately by a man who sounded young and efficient. Wiley said, "Do you speak English?"
"Certainly, sir," the young man said.
"I need to rent a panel van."
"What size, sir?"
"Long wheelbase, high roof. I need plenty of space inside."
"We have Mercedes-Benz or Volkswagen. The Mercedes-Benz is longer, over 4 meters inside."
Wiley did the math in his head. 4 meters was 13 feet. He needed 12, he said. "How far off the ground is the load floor?"
"Quite normal, I think. I'm not sure exactly."
"Does it have a roll-up rear door?"
"No, sir, it has hinged rear doors. Is that a problem?"
"I need to back it up to another truck and move stuff across. Can't get close enough with hinged doors."
"I'm afraid our only option with a roll-up door is in an altogether different class of vehicle. It's a question of gross vehicle weight, technically. In Germany, the heavier vehicles require a commercial license. Do you have one?"
"I'm pretty sure I got the right license for whatever you want to give me. You can count on that. Like a deck of cards."
"Very good, sir," the young man said. "When do you need the van?"
"Immediately," Wiley said. The phone rang again in the consulate room, and Landry passed it to Reacher. It was Bishop, in his office nearby, who said,
"There's a U.S. Army soldier at the reception desk claiming he has orders to report to you."
"Okay," Reacher said. "Send him up. Or should I go get him?"
"I'll have him escorted," Bishop said.
The escort turned out to be a woman of maybe 23, maybe a recent graduate, just starting out, but already foreign service to the Corps. The soldier turned out to be an enlisted man with a Mohawk haircut, from Wiley's air defense unit, his crewmate, the witness from the AWOL file 4 months earlier. He was an E-4, but only a specialist, not a hard striper corporal. One step up from private first class, but not yet an NCO. He was in woodland pattern, battle dress uniform. He was all squared away, maybe 20 years old. He looked like a good soldier. His name tape said Coleman. Nagley put 3 chairs in a quiet corner, and they all sat down. Reacher said, "Thanks for stopping by, soldier. We appreciate it. Did they tell you what this is about?"
Coleman said, "Sir, they told me you'd ask questions about Private Wiley."
His accent was from the South, the Georgia Hill Country, maybe. He was perched on the edge of his chair like the sitting-down version of standing rigidly to attention. Reacher said, "Reports from 4 months ago suggest Wiley was happy to be in your unit. Were those reports correct?" Coleman said, "Yes, I believe they were." "Happy and fulfilled?" "Yes, sir, I believe he was." "Not victimized or oppressed in any way?"
"No, sir, not to my knowledge."
which makes him a very unusual AWOL, and which makes it completely impossible for you or your unit to get the blame. This is not your fault. There is no practical way to make this your fault. 100 bureaucrats could type for 100 years on 100 typewriters and still not get close to making this your fault. Understand? We know Wiley took off for external reasons. Coleman said, "Yes, sir. That was also our conclusion. So relax, okay? You are not accused of anything. There are no wrong answers. There are no dumb answers either. We need anything you can tell us. Any little impression. I don't care how stupid it is, so don't hold back. Get it all out. Then you can have the rest of the day in Hamburg. You can check out the clubs." Coleman nodded. "How long have you known Wiley?"
"He was in the unit nearly 2 years.
Old guy, right?"
"Way older than my oldest brother."
"Did you think that was weird?"
"A little bit."
"Did you have a theory about why he waited so long?"
"I think he tried some other things first."
"Did he talk about them?"
"No, sir, never," Coleman said. "He was all buttoned up. He was a keeper of secrets. We all knew he was hiding things. He was always smiling to himself and saying nothing. But he was old, so we figured it was okay. We figured he was entitled. It didn't stop anyone liking him either. He was a popular guy."
"Was he a hard worker?" Coleman started to answer, and then he stopped. Reacher said, "What?"
"Sir, you asked for stupid impressions?"
"I like stupid," Reacher said. "Sometimes stupid is all we got."
"Well, sir, it seemed to me it wasn't just secrets. It seemed to me like a whole secret plan for his life, day by day. Yes, he was a hard worker. He did it all, never complained. Even the bullshit parts, and most of it is bullshit now. He would get a look on his face. He was happy, because every day was one day closer."
"To what?"
I don't know."
4 months ago, you mentioned Wiley's uncle."
"They were asking us if Wiley was a chatty guy. They wanted to know what he talked about. It wasn't much. He told me he was from Sugar Land, Texas. He knew about beef cattle. One time, he said he wanted to be a rancher, but that was all. He never talked much. Then one night, we were back off an exercise, and we had fired some practice rounds. And we had gotten a pretty good score against the helicopters, so we all laid back and cracked some beers, and we got pretty buzzed. They all got to talking about why they had joined the army, but in a cryptic way. There's some real smart minds in the unit. You had to put it all in one clever sentence. I'm not so good at that type of thing. When my turn came, I said, I joined the army to learn a trade. I thought there could be a double meaning, trade like automobile mechanic or trade like killing people, which would be alternative employment later if automobile mechanic jobs were hard to find."
"Good answer," Reacher said.
"They didn't get it."
"What did Wiley say?"
"But he said he joined the army because his uncle told him Davy Crockett stories, which was short and cryptic, just like it should be, like a crossword puzzle. Then he smiled his secret smile. It was easy for him to be cryptic. He was always cryptic."
"What did you think he meant?"
"I remember Davy Crockett on the television show. I saw him every week. He wore a hat made from an old raccoon. Didn't make me want to join the army. So I don't know what he meant. I guess that time it was me who didn't get it."
"Just uncle, or was there a name?"
Not then, but later they were ragging on him about talking so much about ranching when there was nothing in his hometown but a big old sugar factory. And he said his Uncle Arnold had worked on a ranch before he got drafted. Did that sound like the same uncle or a different uncle? Coleman went quiet, as if running through his own family members and listening in his head to what he called them. This uncle, that uncle. Was there a difference? Eventually he said, I don't know. Wiley was the kind of guy who would use a name where he could. A Texas kind of guy. Old-fashioned courtesy. But he couldn't, in the cryptic sense, because it had to be sharp. So maybe it was Arnold both times, or maybe not. Tell me more about how every day he was one day closer. The secret plan. How was his mood? Did it feel like a step-by-step plan, slow and steady? Or were there ups and downs?
I guess neither, Coleman said. Or a mixture of both. He was always cheerful, but he got happier later. Total of 2 steps only, he was up, and then he was up some more.
When did it change?
About halfway through, about a year ago.
What happened?
Nothing I could put in words.
Got an impression?
It might be stupid.
I like stupid.
I guess he was like a guy waiting for news, always kind of expecting it would be good news, and then finally getting it, and sure enough, it is good news.
Like a guy looking for something he knew was there and finding it?
Exactly like that.
In Jalalabad, it was much later in the morning. Breakfast was long gone, and lunch was coming. The messenger was called back to the small hot room, her second visit of the day. She had already delivered Wiley's response on her arrival at dawn. The fat man had smiled and rocked, and the tall man had clenched his fists and howled like a wolf. Now, only the fat man was there. The tall man's cushion was dented but empty. He was elsewhere. Very busy. Very excited. Busier and more excited than he should have been, she thought, about a matter he had claimed was of very little importance. Silent flies came close and hovered and darted away. The fat man said, "Sit down." The messenger looked at the tall man's cushion. She said,
"May I stand?"
"As you wish. I'm very proud of your performance. It was flawless, as of course it should have been, given the excellence of your training."
"Thank you," she said. "I felt well prepared."
"Was your German adequate?"
"I spoke very little, only to a taxi driver."
"Would it have been adequate if you had to speak more?"
"I believe so, because of the excellence of my training."
"Would you like to go back to Hamburg?"
She thought of photographs and fingerprints and computer records. She said,
"I will go where you in your wisdom choose to send me."
"The delivery is planned, as you know, but we must have a presence to authorize its collection."
"It would be an honor." The fat man said,
"Our language is your greatest strength."
She said,
"That's not for me to say."
"Those who trained you say your memory is excellent, and you know your numbers."
She didn't answer. She didn't want to talk about numbers. Not then. The fat man said,
"Were those who trained you not telling the truth?"
"They were very kind, but too generous. I know hardly any numbers at all."
"Why do you say this?"
She didn't answer.
"Tell me."
"Before Hamburg, you want me to go to Zurich, where they also speak German, to a bank, to transfer money to Wiley with numbers.
account numbers and passcodes. This is how I will be able to authorize the collection.
Do you intend to refuse?
I would need to know the price.
Of course you would. It's one of four important elements. Our account number, our passcode, the amount, and the recipient's account number. A lot to memorize, I know, but it's really a very simple and straightforward transaction.
You don't like it when people know the price.
The fat man said nothing. The messenger said,
I will be sacrificed.
Not if we get what we want. This time it's different. If this deal succeeds, you will always be part of it. We all will. We will become myths and legends. Stories will pass from generation to generation. The price will be revered as a bargain. It will be celebrated. Little girls will pretend to be you. They'll play games about moving the money. Girls will know they can do this, too. The messenger said nothing. The fat man said, But if this deal fails, then yes, you will be killed, whether you go to Zurich or not. You are already part of it. You are already a witness. All witnesses will be killed. The humiliation would be too great for us to bear otherwise. $100 million for nothing? Clearly, we would need to erase it from memory, or we'd be finished as leaders. Our bones would be picked clean. The messenger said,
$100 million? Is that the price?
Go learn the numbers, the fat man said. Be ready to leave tonight. Pray for success. In Hamburg, Wiley rode down in the elevator and stepped out of his lobby. He walked away from the traffic circle, past another building and between two more, to the rear of the complex, where new paving gave way to old granite and cobblestones and preserved dockside cranes. There were new footbridges over the dark water, made of teak and steel, looping gracefully over the voids. Wiley took one and joined another. It was wider, and it led further, all the way to the main road and the bus stop. Wiley sat in the shelter and waited. First the wrong bus came, and then the right bus came. It would stop two blocks from the car rental franchise. Wiley got on. He was calm, no longer falling. Now it was a sequence of simple mechanical tasks. Deliver, collect, fly. By which time, 900 square miles would be waiting for him, visible from outer space. He smiled to himself, alone in the crowd on the bus. Little Horace Wiley. Hot damn. A mile from the bus route, Muller met Dremler in a pastry shop. It had four small tables, all of them occupied by pairs of men just like themselves. Friends, but not really, bound together only by a proposition, be it buying or selling or hedging or insuring or investing or leasing or renting or flipping, or making a stand against crumbling national identity. Dremler said, Once again, thank you for your help in the matter of Reacher's whereabouts. A plan is now in place. Muller said, My pleasure. He can't stay in his hotel all day. He's bound to come out. I expect a positive report any moment.
Good, said Muller.
Did you succeed with the other thing?
Muller took out the sketch of Wiley and flattened it on the table. Dremler said,
Was it hard to get?
It required a tiny paper trail, but it won't lead anywhere.
I have never seen this man before. He is not a movement member.
But Klopp saw him more than once.
Then he goes to the bar to buy or sell, or both. I'll show this picture to the folks I know. We might get a name and address.
We know his name. It's Wiley, and he doesn't have an address. I already checked, remember?
I'm sure he purchased a new identity, or several. That's usually the first things his fellows do. But don't worry. I know exactly who to ask.
Negley told Landry to call his New Orleans field office and script some questions for Wiley's mother on the subject of any and all old boyfriends named Arnold, and any and all old boyfriends who were ranchers and then subsequently drafted, and any and all old boyfriends who ever talked about Davy Crockett. Then Vanderbilt called her over to a chattering telex, where she tore out an armful of paper. Her request, via Sinclair and the Joint Chiefs, for cold case property crimes in Germany, near military installations or areas of activity, during the span of Wiley's active in-country deployment. There were plenty of crimes. Reacher said,
"When do we get Wiley's movement orders?"
"Soon," Negley said. "They're working on it."
The crimes were many and various, all unsolved. There were silent midnight burglaries and armed invasions and robberies and stick-ups and hijacks, all aimed at cash-rich local businesses, like bars and betting parlors and strip clubs. Geographically, the locations matched the military map, because that was where the money was, hence the cash-rich businesses. Perpetrators in such crimes would come from miles around, from far and wide, like seagulls to a landfill. Very few of them would be soldiers, but some of them would be. Negley said,
"Look at the dollar values."
"They're bullshit," Reacher said. "For the insurance, we should cut them in half."
"Even so, one or two of these would give Wiley all the seed money he needed. Three or four of these would put him in a whole different category. We would need to make new assumptions. He could have multiple locations and major resources."
"When did he steal the thing he's selling?"
"Somewhere between the day he located it and the end of his final 96-hour pass. Somewhere in that 10-month period."
"Why hasn't it been reported missing?"
"That depends on what it is. Depends on the audit cycle, I suppose. Maybe they're counting something right now. Maybe the news will break tonight."
"How thorough are the audits?"
"On average, not very," Negley said. "Mostly it's a head count. If there are three containers listed on the inventory, they count one, two, three, and they make a check mark."
"But the containers could be empty or something."
"Got to be one or the other. Either the count hasn't happened yet, or he fooled them somehow. Those are the only two possibilities."
"No, I think there's a third," Reacher said. "Maybe whatever he stole was never on an inventory. Maybe no one knew it was there, so no one knows it's gone."
"Like what?"
"Like my pants."
"What about them?"
"You like them?"
"They're pants."
"They're U.S. Marine Corps khakis, manufactured in 1962 and shipped in 1965. At some point, they were delivered by mistake to a U.S. Army warehouse in Maryland. They stayed there 30 years. Never counted, never audited, never on any guy's list."
"You think someone just bought $100 million worth of pants?"
"Not specifically pants."
"Shirts?"
"Something that got lost in the back of a warehouse, as a third possibility."
"Like what?"
Negley said again. "We were going to fight the Red Army here. We had all kinds of stuff. And people screw up. If they can randomly send a bale of jarhead pants to an army base, they can randomly send anything anywhere.
Okay, Navely said. It's a third possibility.
Then the phone rang. Griezmann, who said, something weird happened. Chapter 29. Reacher put the call on speaker, and all seven people gathered around, and Griezmann said,
a local police station just got a telephone call from the manager of a car rental franchise, near your hotel, as a matter of fact. A man who spoke in English and sounded American just rented a large panel van, despite the fact he spoke only in English. His ID was German. The clerk at the desk did the deal, but the manager was in the back office and overheard the conversation. He recognized the customer's voice. The guy had rented there before, not long ago. Afterward, for some reason, the manager checked the deal in the computer and saw the guy had used a completely different name than the last time. He had used a whole different set of ID.
When was this? Reacher said.
20 minutes ago.
Description?
Vague, but it could be Wiley. That's why I'm calling you. I already sent the car with a copy of the sketch. We'll know in a minute or two.
Was the name German the last time?
Yes, but different. Last time it was Ernst, and this time it's Gebhardt.
Okay, thanks, Reacher said. Get back to us when the rental people have seen the sketch. He killed the call. Sinclair said,
this is the end game, starting now. The van is for the delivery.
And then he's getting the hell out, Waterman said. He's burning through his spare ID. He's keeping his Sunday best for the airport.
20 minutes, Landry said. He could be 10 miles out of town by now.
Griezmann has no more jurisdiction. We need to go federal. The phone rang. Griezmann, who said,
now we have a positive ID on the sketch. It was Wiley who rented the truck. Confidence level is 100%. I already put out an APB on the plate number. The traffic division will handle it. They can liaise out of town. They do it all the time. We're assuming a 15-kilometer radius by now, about 10 miles. It's coming up on 25 minutes. Almost certainly he's moving south or east, unless he's going to Denmark or Holland. We have cars on the main roads and the autobahns. Rest assured, we'll have a lot of eyeballs on it. It's a large vehicle and slow.
What address did he use? Reacher asked.
It was phony. Nothing but a hole in the ground for another new apartment building on the other side of town.
Anything else? Reacher said.
Just that the clerk at the rental franchise said Wiley was concerned about the height of the load floor and that he needed a roll-up rear door, not hinged, because he said he intended to back the truck up to another truck and transfer a load across.
Thanks, Reacher said. He killed the call.
Sinclair said, at least now we know what kind of thing it is. It's not a document. It's not intelligence. It needs a large panel van with a roll-up door.
To back up to a similar vehicle, Nagley said.
Why? If the load is already in a truck, why get another truck?
Maybe the first truck was stolen, Reacher said. Maybe he's worried about getting pulled over.
Nagley turned and leafed through the telex concertina. Cold case property crimes in Germany, near military installations during Wiley's deployment. She traced her finger down the faint gray list.
Her finger stopped. She said,
7 months ago, a delivery truck with a roll-up door was stolen from a mom-and-pop furniture store on the outskirts of Frankfurt. Local and then national police were given the number, but the vehicle was never found.
Her fingers started again. She licked her thumb and turned the pages. She said,
nothing else. Plenty of cars, but no more roll-up doors. Reacher said. That was 3 months before he went AWOL.
It was a long game.
Did he steal the thing the same night he stole the truck?
Almost certainly, which begins to define a location. If he's the kind of guy who worries about getting pulled over, he would steal the truck close by, drive it the minimum, steal the thing, drive the minimum again, and hide the truck as soon as possible, in a barn or something, with the thing still inside. A triangular route, fast and focused, minimum mileage, minimum risk. We could be looking at a fairly small area somewhere near Frankfurt.
But then he returned to his unit. For 3 months, why?
He was laying low, waiting for a reaction, hiding in plain sight, which was a smart move. We'd have been looking at AWOLs and outside bad guys, not grunts on the post. But the thing was never missed. The alarm was never raised. There was no reaction. So as soon as he felt sure of that, he left at the next opportunity. He holed up in Hamburg. It took him 4 months to sell the thing. Now he's headed back to pick it up.
Those are big conclusions, Sinclair said, aren't they? Anyone could have stolen that furniture truck. Reacher said, we need to know where Wiley was 7 months ago. We need his movement orders.
They're coming, Nagley said.
And right then, the telex machine burst into chattering life. Wiley had driven the big new van back toward the center of town, slowly, carefully, inching through the city traffic, waiting at lights, checking his mirrors. He looped around the Alsen-Alster Lake and crawled through St. Georg, curving west, heading toward where he lived. But long before he got there, he turned left and rumbled over a boxy metal bridge into the old docks where the piers were too small for modern freighters, which meant the warehouses were also too small, which made them cheap to rent. He parked in front of a dull green double door and slid down from the high seat. The double door had padlocked bolts top and bottom and a padlocked hasp in the middle. He had all three keys. He opened the right-hand door and propped it, and then he walked back and opened the left-hand door and propped it. The space inside was about 30 feet by 40 by more than 15 feet tall. Like a double garage in a nice suburban house in Sugarland, but swollen up some. The right-hand slot was empty. The left-hand slot had the old furniture truck. He had driven it from Frankfurt 7 months before, the same night he stole it, the same night he loaded its precious cargo. The crazy sprint was not strictly necessary, because he had changed the plates to be on the safe side. He could have taken his time, but he had wanted to get where he was going. He wanted to hunker down. He only just made it. It was an old truck, a piece of shit, basically. The oil light was on the whole way. The engine was making noises. It was close to dying when he parked it, nose in, thankful to have gotten it there. Thankful to have avoided a tow truck. Some things would have been hard to explain. He shut it down, and it never started again. Seized solid, hence the rental. He parked it next to its predecessor, and he closed the dull green doors and padlocked the bolts again and the hasp, and he put the keys in his pocket. He crossed an old iron footbridge to a different pier, and then the new footbridges took over. Soaring teak and steel, carrying him from one pier to the next, to the rear of his development, where he walked between two buildings and past another, to his lobby and his elevator and his apartment door. Muller closed his office door and called Dremler on his desk phone. He said, "The man in the sketch has left town in a truck. We just got a request for assistance from Griezmann's division. We are putting an APB on the plate number, starting 15 kilometers out, going national if we need to."
"He's delivering," Dremler said. "We missed it."
"No, the truck is clearly empty.
He just picked it up from a rental franchise.
Then he's collecting something from somewhere else, which is much more interesting. Keep me informed. Make sure I'm the first to know.
I will.
I'm afraid the other thing didn't work out.
Reacher?
He predicted it. He brought people with him. He ambushed the ambush. A squad of 12, my guide said, all armed with military weapons, plus him. My guys didn't stand a chance.
While he was on a 96-hour pass the night the truck was stolen, whereabouts unknown, that was the first thing his movement orders revealed. His immediately previous location had been his regular billet on a post some miles north and east of the mom-and-pop furniture store. But not many miles, Reacher thought. Dozens, not hundreds. He knew the area. He had been there many times. It was all reasonably local. Like Sugarland to downtown Houston. A bus ride. Beginning to end, the orders showed Wiley arriving in country and then bouncing back and forth between what used to be a forward position in the battle area to a rearward position in a maintenance depot, which was the post north and east of Frankfurt. There were also regular voluntary detachments to a storage locker 30 miles west. What was once a supply depot was by then a dump for stuff no one needed anymore. Members of Wiley's unit could volunteer to go cannibalize parts from retired machines. The XO called it hands-on training in on-the-field maintenance, which Reacher agreed sounded better than the guy admitting he had to scavenge retreads to keep his unit limping along. But despite the hard sell, it was not popular duty. There had been 4 opportunities. No one had volunteered more than once, except Wiley. Wiley had volunteered 3 times, the first 3, but not the 4th. Nagley said,
"That's where he saw it, obviously, whatever it is, in the storage locker. Has to be. Maybe the first time he searched for it, the second time he found it, the third time he planned it. Then he stole it 7 months ago, which meant he didn't have to go back the 4th time. The thing was gone by then. He already had it."
"Hidden nearby, according to you." "We need to confirm it. We need eyes on the road, 4 guys with binoculars, like a visual trap. Maybe on the Autobahn south of Hanover. He can't have gotten that far yet."
He dialed Griesmann, who said he would take care of it. Sinclair said,
"He's very helpful,"
Reacher said, "so far."
"Are you blackmailing him?"
"I said I wouldn't, but I'm not sure he believes me. So I guess I am, in a way. The end result is the same."
"Long may it continue."
"It won't," Reacher said. "Griesmann will dump us as soon as he gets a bigger problem."
"Is there a bigger problem than this?"
"He doesn't know how bad it is."
"Should we tell him?"
Sinclair said.
"Should we make an official request for assistance?"
White said,
"That would be a political disaster. It would project weakness. Russia is practically next door. We can't wash our dirty linen in public."
Waterman said, "And it's too late anyway. The Germans would take half a day even to respond. It would take a whole day to brief them in properly, maybe more, because they're starting from cold, which means Wiley would get at least a 36-hour start. By then he could be anywhere. This is a big country now."
Dremler's office was on the 4th floor of a building wholly owned by him. He rode down in the elevator, which was the original 1950s item. Reliable, but slow. It took 20 seconds to reach the lobby, during which time Dremler imported and sold 33 pairs of Brazilian shoes. which was a comforting statistic. 1 million pairs a week. More than 50 million pairs a year. He left his building and walked through the weak midday sun, a block, two, three, to the bar with the varnished wood front. Once upon a time, it would have been considered early for a lunch break, but the place was already crowded, because new, staggered office hours meant lunch breaks happened throughout the day in a ceaseless, ongoing relay. Drimler pushed through the crowd, nodding and greeting, until he saw Wolfgang Schlupp on a stool at the bar. Not an impressive specimen. Dark hair, dark eyes, lean, dark face, built like a shivering dog, but useful, about to be more useful. Drimler elbowed in next to him, shoulder first, his back to the room. He said,
"How's business, Herr Schlupp?"
Schlupp said,
"What do you need?"
"Information," Drimler said.
"For the cause. The new Germany depends on it."
A barman in a heavy canvas apron came over, and Drimler ordered a liter of beer. Schlupp said,
"What kind of information?"
"You need a driver's license and maybe a passport for an American gentleman."
"Hold it right there.
I didn't make nothing." "Okay. You passed a customer's order to your partners in Berlin. They made it. All you did was keep half the money."
"So what?"
Drimler squeezed himself some extra space and took out the drawing. He smoothed it on the bar. He said,
"This guy.
The hair, the brow, the cheekbones, the deep-set eyes." Schlupp said,
"I don't remember him." "I think you do." "What of it?"
"It's important to the cause."
"What is?"
"What new name did this man take?"
"Why do you need to know?"
"We want to find him." Schlupp said,
"You know I can't tell you. What kind of business would I have? No one would trust me."
"This is one time only. No one will ever know. This guy is in trouble already, but we want him first. Right now, he's heading somewhere in an empty panel van to pick something up, presumably a heavy load, given the size of the van. Could be weapons. Could be Nazi gold from a salt mine."
"And you want it?"
"For all of us, for the cause. It would make a huge difference." Schlupp didn't answer. Drimler said, "There would be a fantasy, of course, or a consultation agreement, a straight commission, if you like." Schlupp said,
"I would be taking a risk. It's like being a priest. It's understood I won't talk."
"The size of the fee would, of course, reflect the size of the risk." Schlupp looked at the sketch. He said,
"I think I remember him. I've done a lot of Americans. I think this guy chose three separate names. The first two were identity cards and driver's licenses only. But I think this third had a passport."
"What were the names?"
"Why, it was months ago. I would have to look it up."
"You don't remember?"
"I hear hundreds of names."
"When can you do it?"
"When I get home."
"Call me at once, will you? It's very important to the cause."
"Okay,"
Schlupp said. Drimler nodded in satisfaction and left the way he had come, leading with the other shoulder, pushing through the crowd, nodding and greeting, back to the weak midday sun beyond the open door. The barman, who had served his liter of beer, picked up the phone. The phone rang in the consulate room. Vanderbilt picked it up and gave it to Reacher. It was Orozco. He said,
"Are we in trouble?"
"Not yet," Reacher said. "We think Wiley's heading for Frankfurt. We think he stole something from the storage locker near his home base about 7 months ago. Then we think he hid it. Now we think he's heading down there to pick it up. We have plenty of people in Frankfurt.
I know, Reacher said. I'll call them if I need them.
I just finished up with Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee. They saved the best for last. Turns out they sold an M9 to Wiley, so bear that in mind. He's armed.
Wiley's phone rang, and he took the call in his kitchen. He knew immediately, from the background noise, who it was. The friendly barman, made friendlier still by liberal applications of folding money, and amounts somewhere between tips and bribes, plus an extra wad for just-in-case emergencies, or warnings, or whatever else, in the opinion of the guy who was taking the cash, would be appreciated by the guy who was giving the cash. The same the world over. All unsaid and unspoken, but well understood. The guy said,
Wolfgang Schlapp is going to sell you out to Dremler.
Wiley said,
For how much?
A percentage?
Dremler says you're on your way to find Nazi gold.
I was on my way to the bathroom.
You've got until Schlupp gets home.
The phone rang again in the consulate room, and Landry picked it up and gave it to Nagley, who gave it to Reacher. It was Griezmann. He said,
It turns out our traffic division needs extreme detail for a remote operation like Hanover will be. We'll all save time if you give them the specifications direct. Better accuracy, too. I've alerted Sir Deputy Chief. He's expecting your call. I'll give you his number. His name is Muller.
Okay, Reacher said. Anything else?
Nothing. Good luck.
Thank you.
Reacher hung up and redialed. The phone rang on Muller's desk. He closed the door and sat down and picked up. An American voice said,
Is that Deputy Chief Muller?
Muller said,
Yes.
My name is Reacher. I believe Chief of Detectives Griezmann told you I would call. Muller moved a file and found a pad of message forms. He picked up a pencil. He noted the date, the time, and the caller. He said,
Apparently you wish autobahn traffic to be monitored south of Hanover.
You have the plate number. I need to know if it's heading from here to the Frankfurt area.
What exactly do you envisage, Vermont?
Cars on the shoulders, or on the bridges, four pairs of eyes, like a regular speed trap, but with binoculars, not radar guns.
We have no experience of such things, Mr. Reacher. There are no speed limits on the autobahns.
But you get the gist.
I have seen American television.
Muller wrote, Gist. On the message pad. Reacher said, Communication needs to be instant. I need time to arrange things at the other end.
Muller said, You know where he is going?
Not exactly. Not yet.
Tell me when you work it out. I could allocate resources.
Thank you. I will.
Muller hung up. He tore the top sheet off the message pad. He tore it in half. And then quarters and eighths and sixteenths, like confetti, which he dropped in his trash can. Reacher could claim the conversation had taken place, but Muller could claim it had ended with a last gasp, never mind withdrawal, and hence cancellation of all just agreed points. Couldn't be proven either way. A classic, he said, she said, which the cops always won. He dialed Dremler. He said,
Believe it or not, I just have Reacher on the phone. A problem Griezmann dumped in my lap. Reacher thinks Wiley is heading to Frankfurt. He promised to tell me the exact destination just as soon as he has it.
Excellent.
Did you get his new name?
It's on its way very soon.
Wolfgang Schlapp left the bar as soon as he was good and ready, and he took two alleys and a bus, which let him out one alley and two left turns from home, which was a top-floor apartment in a pre-war townhouse. No elevator, given the age of the place, but plenty of equity. There had long been a rumor the whole townhouse row had been incorrectly repaired after the wartime bombing. But then an engineer's report had proved exactly the opposite. Prices had doubled overnight. Schlupp had gotten in early. He had overheard a conversation in the bar, back to back with two city officials swapping gossip. He walked up the stairs, through the second floor lobby, through the third, and onward. Wiley heard him coming. He was leaning on the wall in the shadow between a fire cabinet and a hot water riser. He had a gun in his hand, his Beretta M9, army kind of surplus, bought from two chuckleheads stealing from a supply company, in the very same bar where the talkative Mr. Schlupp plied his not-so-secret-after-all trade. Schlupp stepped up from the top stair and hunched left, and unlocked his door. Wiley came out of the shadow and shoved him through it, the gun in his back, kicking the door shut with his heel, pushing him on down the hallway to a spacious living room, all urban and gray and bare brick, where Schlupp tripped and fell on a black leather sofa and lay there helpless. Wiley stood above him and aimed the gun at his face. He said,
"I heard you're going to sell me out, Wolfgang."
"Not true," Schlupp said.
"I would never do that. What kind of business would I have?"
"You told Gemma you would."
"I was going to make up a name and send him on a wild goose chase."
"You got records here?"
"All in code."
"Why not make up a name in the bar? Why wait to get back to the records?"
"Was it Gemma who told you?"
"Doesn't matter who. You were going to sell me out. You were going to look me up in the records. Dremler told you to call him at once because it was very important to the cause."
"No way, man. That's bullshit. How could I? Who would trust me again?"
"Why didn't you make up a name in the bar?"
Schlupp didn't answer. Wiley said,
"Show me the records."
Schlupp struggled to his feet, and they went down the hallway the same way they came up, but slower, the gun in Schlupp's back all the way, to a small bedroom in use as an office. Schlupp pointed to a high shelf. He said,
"Serrate file folder,"
which was like a three-ring binder, except it had four. Pre-punched pages had lines of handwritten code. Nonsense, non-words in separate columns. Maybe old name, new name, passport, license, national ID. Wiley said,
"Which one am I?"
"I wasn't going to sell you out."
"Why didn't you make up a name in the bar?"
"Tremless fool of it, man. Right now, he thinks you're deep in the country in a panel van, looking for Nazi gold. But evidently you're not. So he's wrong about that, which means he could be wrong about everything. That's logical, right? Why even listen to him?"
"I didn't," Wiley said. "I listened to the barman. Gemmler asked, and you answered. You were going to sell me out.
If you didn't want to, you would have given up a phony name right there and then."
"Okay. Maybe you froze,
but a minute later you would have figured it out and said,
'Yes, now I remember. He calls himself Schmidt,' or some such. But you didn't. He scares me, man. He can make trouble. Okay, I was going to tell him, but I changed my mind."
"When you saw me?"
"No, before."
"I don't believe you."
"What kind of business would I have?"
Gemler told you he'd cover the risk.
I swear, man.
You're wrong. I changed my mind. I would never do it.
In for a penny, in for a pound. All or nothing. Wiley said,
better safe than sorry, pal.
He swapped hands on the gun, fast and smooth and fluid, and he cracked Schlupp hard on the temple, backhand, with the heel of the butt. He didn't want to shoot him, not there, too noisy. He hit him again, forehand, on the other temple, and the guy's head bounced around like a rag doll. When he came to rest, Wiley hit him again, a vicious downward chop right on the top of his skull, like an axe or a hammer. Schlupp fell to his knees. Wiley hit him again. Schlupp pitched forward and fell on his face. Wiley leaned down and hit him again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Bone cracked, and blood oozed and spattered. Wiley stopped and took a breath. He checked Schlupp's neck for a pulse. Nothing. He gave it a whole minute just to be sure. Still, nothing. So he wiped his gun on Schlupp's shirt, and he picked up the red file folder, and he left. Chapter 30 Reacher sat quietly in the corner of the consulate room, waiting for the phone to ring, wondering who would call first, either New Orleans or Deputy Chief Muller in the traffic division. It was like waiting for the winner of a slow-motion race. He pictured dawn breaking over the Delta, languorously, and local FBI agents waking up and eating breakfast slowly and then heading out, at which point the process might get a little faster. Presumably, their appointment with Wiley's mother would be the first of the day. Given the pressure from Waterman and Landry, possibly as early as 8 o'clock in the morning, given that a welfare recipient would want to stay cool with the government, against that semi-leisurely Louisiana timeline ran Wiley's panel van, 5,000 miles away in Germany, cruising at maybe 60 miles an hour, closing in on Hanover and bypassing it and leaving it behind and rolling on south toward the unmarked cars. Who would get there first? The phone rang. Neither New Orleans nor Deputy Chief Muller. It was Griesmann, who said, I have a serious problem. Reacher said,
What kind?
We have a homicide in the old part of town. A small man with his head bashed in. It's a very fresh scene. A neighbor heard a noise. I feel obliged to send all my men there, at least for today. I really have no alternative. So I'm very sorry, my friend, but I am forced to suspend our temporary assistance.
And you're wondering how I'm going to feel about that.
Griesmann paused a beat.
No, he said. I took you at your word.
Reacher said, Good luck with the homicide.
Thank you.
Reacher killed the call. Sinclair looked a question and Reacher said,
We're on our own now.
Because you're such a gentleman.
We have time.
The messenger could be in Zurich by now.
Doesn't matter. It's this part that matters. Something physical in a panel van, which can't move like money, not secretly in the blink of an eye. It's slow and ponderous and noisy and visible because it's real.
Except Muller hasn't seen it.
Yet.
How long will you give it?
2 hours, maybe.
Then what?
I'll conclude Wiley wasn't headed for Frankfurt.
The phone rang again. This time it was the New Orleans FBI, patched through direct from their car outside the one-room shack where Wiley's mother lived. Two agents, a man and a woman, immediate reports as requested. They had led off their interview with the scripted questions about the name Arnold and the drafted rancher and the Davy Crockett van. Turned out they were all the same guy. His full name was Arnold Peter Mason, born and grew up in Amarillo, Texas. As a kid, he worked on a ranch